will belatedly get going now at 4:06 PM. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Mr. Sinapi.
Here.
Mr. Dilwees.
Here.
Mr. Foley.
Here.
Mr. Gephardt. Mr. Kirby.
Here.
Mr. Lattiser.
Here.
Mr. Muto.
Here.
Mr. Napa.
Here.
Mr. Ricks.
Here.
Would Councilman Ricks please lead us in the salute to the flag?
I pledge allegiance to the blue flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we
As mentioned, would potentially be the case yesterday. Councilman Gephardt can't be with us tonight due to the unexpected death of a close friend of both his families. Solicitor Walsh will be joining us shortly. And as a reminder, purpose of the meeting, we're having a public meeting on PCR 55-25 resolution relative to transfers, supplemental appropriations, and emergency appropriations, and PCR 56-25 resolution adopting the budget and estimating the tax rates of the City of Warwick for the fiscal year beginning July 1st, 2026 and ending June 30th, 2027, inclusive of FY27 general funds, FY27 personnel funds, FY27 special and capital funds budgets. Do we have a motion to reopen the public hearing on unfinished items of PCR 55-26 and PCR 56-26 from
May 18th? Make a motion to open the public hearing.
Second.
Any objection? Seeing none, so opened. Is there any objection to first starting with the school department?
No objection.
Alrighty. So school department, you are up.
Thank you. Mr. President, members of the City Council, the FY27 school budget was developed utilizing the deficit reduction plan created by the Budget Commission and approved by the Auditor General. This is a very lean budget focused on the core mission of Warwick Public Schools, delivering high quality instruction, supporting student achievement, and maintaining safe learning environments. The budget prioritizes classroom instruction with meeting the basic requirements for the basic education plan established by the Rhode Island Board of Education. The total proposed FY27 general funds budget is $203,874,517, representing a 2.68% increase. The primary drivers of the increase are contractual salary obligations, employee benefits, pension contributions, non-staffing requirements, transportation costs, and out-of-district tuition expenditures for special education, career and technical education, and charter schools. This budget was developed within the fiscal parameters established by the Budget Commission's approved deficit reduction plan. The Auditor General expressed concerns that certain expenditure line items present a level of financial risk that may limit the school department's ability to effectively manage escalating costs. Those concerns outlined by the Auditor General have become a reality within the recommended budget, within the budget before you. I publicly expressed these same concerns at the time as well. The reality is that approximately 94% of the budget, including salary, benefits, transportation, out-of-district tuitions, is increasing at a rate ranging from 2.5% to 14.25%. These financial pressures require difficult decisions in order to comply with and achieve the Auditor General's approved deficit reduction plan. Please note that the FY27 budget reflects our commitment to maintaining educational programming despite significant financial constraints. With me this evening is the school committee chair, Sean Galligan, as well as our executive director of finance, Craig Enos. At this time, I'd ask Mr. Enos to come forward.
Thank you, Superintendent, Council President, members of the City Council. Thank you for your time. Just to hit a couple of highlights within the budget that you have before you. We are coming to you to ask for a 2.68% increase over the appropriation for fiscal year 26. That number, $147,550,218. We have also down on the budget our the state appropriation, and as we have been doing a better job at doing our Medicaid reimbursements, we've increased that number as well on the revenue side. So total budget of $203,874,517. Contained within the 51,000 series and the 52,000 series are the two major sections that relate to the collective bargaining agreements, salaries, and all the related benefits. One of the highlights for the benefits, we received a 3% increase on our healthcare and for the dental insurance. That was very competitive compared to what some of the other school districts and municipalities have received for this year. In terms of in terms of the operating expenses, we have some of our grants have expired. One of the grants, the school violence and prevention program, that was funding our director of safety and security. That grant was not renewed with RIDE. There was some language that the federal government had wanted the state to sign off on, and they refused. So the grant funds go away. That position is very much needed. And so we have now included that within the budget. The other big portion of our budget as it relates is for the 55,000 series, the other purchase services, transportation, out of district tuitions, both to public schools within Rhode Island, special education schools, and charter schools. We already have within our contract for first student a 5.5% increase for the coming year. One item to note for that, we have done an audit. RIDE had approached us earlier in the spring about participating in a transportation audit to look at our routes, look at all the students who are riding, and they were coming back to us with the recommendations on where we could possibly make some reductions. What happened was when they did the first review of the audit, it didn't contain all of the bus routes. But what it was able to tell us was that in some of our schools on the afternoon runs, if we have a bus that can seat 48 students and you only have 3 students that are riding on that bus in the afternoon, and that happens on a couple of runs, there are some efficiencies that we can do to really look at our runs. So we submitted the rest of the information to RIDE. We have an appointment with them later on for this week to review the rest of the findings, but we really do feel that we can condense runs, adjust some of the bell times, and realize some significant savings for the community. In terms of our public school placements, the students that are going to other schools for high school, that rate has not been set yet by RIDE. That usually comes out towards the end of the month. We are anticipating an increase of 20 students leaving us for next year. So about 195 students are going to be going to some other high school. We also have our increases for special education out-of-district tuitions, which we have no choice over. If we have a student that moves into the district with an IEP that places them out of the district, we are obligated to fund that. Charter schools, same thing. That is a mandated cost. One of the items that we were hoping to place in the budget, but it had a significant impact, was the upgrade of the refresh of the student Chromebooks. That was about $500,000. We are not including that in the budget for this year. The director of technology feels that we can hold off for one more year and putting that in place. We've also been having discussions on the administrative level about changing the recycle time. We used to do grades 1, 5, and 9. If we change it to grades 3 and grade 8, then there's been the other discussions that we've been having about whether or not a one-to-one device program is really where the district should be going. And that talk is going to be going on as the rest of the year goes on. So in the end, so that brings us to our total expenses, $205,351,332. Our work continues to reduce the expenses in this budget. First, we're looking at breakage for the retirements. We know that, you know, we can realize significant savings from a step 10 teacher with the master's with family benefits to going to a step 3 teacher with master's and family benefits. Historically, the district has had in the mid 30s for retirements over the past few years. So we feel very strongly that getting breakage of almost $1 million is something that we are going to be able to obtain for this year. And then finally, as I said, our work on the transportation audit is not done. And so the rest of our savings, we are anticipating approximately another $482,000 in the transportation. So if we take into account those two items, our budget will be balanced. However, the one item that we have not been able to address is the repayment to the city of the first year deficit reduction plan. $1,141,779. Those are funds owed back to the city for covering our expenses. As we achieve additional savings and get more retirements, we are going to be able to allocate those funds towards that repayment. Thank you, Chairman Galligan. Did you want to make some comments? Thank you.
Thank you, Council President, members of the Council, Mayor Cozy, and Chief of Staff Vicente. I'm just going to speak briefly here with regards to the passage of the budget by the school committee. As you know, the initial draft deficit reduction plan approved by the Auditor General had an allocation of 2.18% within FY27, and before you tonight is a request for a 2.68% allocation. That additional 0.5%, as outlined by Superintendent McCaffrey, was based on some of the very conservative cost estimates that were put into the deficit reduction plan by the commission. I appreciate the city's administration for acknowledging that some of those estimates went in the opposite direction, as advertised by the Auditor General, that it was possible and likely to happen. I just want to state, so it's not misconstrued on the record, that while we're asking for 2.68% and that this is 0.5% higher than what was in the deficit reduction plan, my professional opinion from a risk perspective, given that the district does not have substantial financial autonomy here in FY27, there's significant relief in 28 and beyond in the five-year deficit reduction plan. But we passed that to show that we were in line with the deficit reduction plan as a show of good faith that we support the deficit reduction plan. But I want it to be very clear there's substantial risk associated with that deficit reduction plan. And I'd like to give you just a few examples. You know, we just heard from Executive Director Enos that they have a lot of initiatives they're working on. None of yet have been implemented and cost savings realized, right? So it's good to hear that they're working on it, and I'm very proud to hear that they're working on driving down our operational expenses, something we should all expect, not just as locally elected officials, but as taxpayers. But if the switch flips tomorrow and it's July 1st and these haven't been implemented as of yet, if we have one DCYF placement in our city tomorrow, in that particular instance, the money does not follow the child, we will have a deficit. If we have another student come into our city tomorrow and they are screened and they require a one-to-one IEP, we will have a deficit. We have to hire a TA, okay, rightfully so, and then provide them their salary plus benefits. You will have a deficit. There are many other instances that I could provide to add, you know, to highlight that there is a very thin margin of error here, very thin. And I just wanted to be on the record tonight that the school committee acknowledges that we are approving a budget that is in line with what was put together by the Budget Commission to show good faith on our part, working aggressively with our school department and the administration. And I applaud Superintendent McCaffrey and all of his staff. They've been working very, very, very hard. But I want you to know right now that from a risk perspective, it is my professional opinion that you can expect to probably be back here again next May with a deficit. In FY27, the foundational year of the deficit reduction plan, and not because of the there isn't hard work and fiscal discipline or new controls on the part of the superintendent and his staff, but because if we look at historically how the school department operates and should operate, it's you operate based on student need. And our student needs continue to change. On a lighter note, 5-6 years ago, people decided instead of doing puzzles and going for a walk, they did other things. And now our kindergarten population after COVID is through the roof. And we need to start looking at opening up classrooms, all unbudgeted, all prepared to offer up another deficit. And you're probably sitting there going, well, Sean, balancing a budget means drawing down from another expense line, right? You know, if you're spending a dollar over here that's unbudgeted, you draw from a dollar over here. Yes, we understand that. However, there's no more dollars over here for us to draw down from, okay? We were chasing $2.1 million already. So any savings that we realized up to this point were already absorbed. And we then had to face inflation of other expenses. But as I stated, in FY28, there is financial relief for this district. The contracts come before the school committee and the school district. So there's a chance to possibly look at language in there and provide some financial relief to the district. Service provider contracts come before the district for renegotiation. So that gives the school district at that time in FY28 more opportunity. But FY27, a critical year within the five-year deficit reduction plan. A lot of constraint on this gentleman here. I don't know how he's still standing upright each day. So I just wanted to go on the record that we passed the 2.68% budget, but we did so, you know, I guess I would say under duress and in good faith to adhere to the five-year deficit reduction plan. But if you were asking me what you should do tonight, if I were in your shoes, if there's another penny or nickel somewhere else that you could throw towards this as an insurance policy to the district to not have another deficit, I would highly suggest and urge you to throw it towards the school district. Thank you.
Thank you. To the superintendent, if I may. I'm watching my time.
Yes.
Maybe. Teacher and union president at Davies Career Tech, you and I were together up at the State House fighting for...
Absolutely.
So I just want to get your background on the record. You have been in education for how many years?
30 years.
And in the Warwick system for all of that time or thereabouts?
Yes.
You're obviously a certified, accredited school administrator, superintendent, and all those necessary certifications to be in your position.
Yes.
A number of us on the council, if not all of us, have received emails over the last week about the Warwick Early Learning Center. Obviously, I realize as an educator that that must have been a hard decision for you to decide to cut. Can you just briefly tell us, because I don't believe everything I read, especially in the Beacon or on social media, what exactly was cut?
What we've done is we've taken a look at our special ed programming. We've looked at IEPs. The director of special education, Mr. Carter, looked at every single IEP at the Warwick Early Learning Center, and decisions were based upon meeting the needs of the IEP for the students at the Warwick Early Learning Center, making sure that the service hours that are in the IEPs are accommodated, and to make sure that we are supporting the students.
A follow-up question. My understanding of state law, if a student has an IEP, you can't deviate from that. You must follow their individual educational programs.
Warwick schools will follow the IEP and accommodate what's in the IEP.
Okay, thank you. And again, based on your educational expertise, because it is expertise, 30 years in education alone gives you a lot of expertise, but I know all those advanced degrees you have to get to be in the position you're in. And you used all that expertise.
Foley, you're giving me a big head here.
You deserve it. Trust me. Like I said, I've been in the war and the battles with you. I've seen you firsthand fight for your students, your children, and you deserve the pat on the back. My point is this, though. It wasn't a frivolous thing you did. It was thoughtful, following guidelines, and your expertise that you made this decision.
Decisions were made to support students.
I have another question off that topic. State reimbursement. Now, according to the newspapers, and I did some checking to make sure it was correct, the state is sitting on some type of a surplus in the $200 million range or whatever. Have you heard or gotten any inkling of an increase in school aid from the state?
I have seen what's out on social media, but until I see a proposal for funding, it doesn't hold any credibility with me.
Okay, thank you. Now, thank you for your time. If I could have Mr. Enos with a couple of questions. How are you doing tonight, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you, sir?
On the Budget Commission was a gentleman, David Champagne.
Yes.
David Champagne and I are very, very close friends. I am proud of the work he did, but more importantly, he commends you for the work you've done. And if Dave Champagne is commending you, I have full faith in you also. That being said, you said something earlier that perplexed me. You said breakage. And you're saying that you anticipate 38 retirements this school year? Did I hear that right?
Yeah. So on an average, over the past couple of years, you've been in the mid-30s, 36, 38.
Okay. So, if I may, my follow-up question is this. By contract, you can lay off 20. You have, in the proposal, 38 eliminations. And you're saying over and above that, unless someone has handed in their papers today, and when I retired from Davies, I handed my resignation in May for December 31st so the school could plan. So do you have in hand right now any of those 38 that you're anticipating?
We have, I think, 12 or 13.
12 or 13. So there would be another 25 retirees And they're like you explained, that you, that's a top step, you should be a top step, as I say it, with all the bells and whistles that are going out the door that you could replace with a first-year teacher, second-year, third-year.
Correct.
But not only that, I know we did this at Davies, is you could look at some of those teachers in that 38 group that you did lay off, terminate, or eliminate. And if someone has a matching certificate, you laid off a social study teacher, but I have credits in math, there are ways for me, by taking either extra credits or petitioning the state, to get an emergency certificate. And if one of those retirees is in math, you could reach out to me and say, Mr. Foley, if you go get these three credits, or we ask for a waiver and an emergency certification, you have a job back.
Correct.
Okay, so things haven't changed that much in 8 years.
Correct.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you again on that. I appreciate it. To my last few moments, I would like to make a statement. I appreciate the efforts with the Budget Commission, the hard work you all put in. I appreciate the position we're in as a city and as a school system. And I know how hard it is day in and day out going into a classroom and teaching, because I did it for almost 40 years, Mr. McCaffrey, the last 30 of which were at Davies Career Tech. That being said, I have to be honest that in the last few years, different administration, different leaders in two positions, things were proposed to us in the budget. We voted, we passed it. And shortly thereafter, those things that were promised to be done were not done. And that put us in the position we're in today. That being said, I fully believe you are going to do what is in front of us. And if that this budget is enacted and you do the things you say you're going to do, and Mr. Gallin, the point you made was well taken. You know, someone comes in, I understand that fully. That's an outlier. But if you do the things you say you're going to do, and we reach January of 2027, and there's a shortfall, and you come back to us and you say, we've dotted our I's, we crossed our T's, we did everything we said we were going to do, we're still a million short. I will be one of your strongest advocates in this chamber doing a supplemental appropriation. I just can't do that at this time. Thank you.
So I have a few questions based on all the emails I received. For the WELC funding, so I understand that the position is that none of the IEPs will be at issue. Now, three of the five self-contained AEP classrooms are being cut. Is that accurate? And a lot of these initial questions are going to be special
sure.
education.
I'm going to have our director of special education respond to that question.
So yes, that is correct. We worked on that this afternoon and scheduled all of our pre-K school for next year. What we ended up keeping in terms of full day is two AAP sections, one IES, which is a behavioral, and one full-time integrated. All other classrooms move to half day.
And are the cuts for the classrooms going to result in overcrowding in the remaining ones?
No, and not at this point in time. However, with the big caveat, like I said before in the school committee meeting, is that our pre-K is an open enrollment, and that students enroll throughout the course of the year. That the cuts that we do now doesn't necessarily mean that come January, we need to open up more classrooms.
So if it turns out, based on enrollment between now and the start of the year, you have the ability to open another classroom to address that?
At this point in time, we have abilities between now and September to absorb increases as they come along. In terms of after September, that becomes a question because we can never fully predict how many students are going to be enrolled throughout the course of the year. Looking at trends, though, we feel that what we have right now can absorb the additions coming between now and September.
And the cut to the number of TAs in the IASE classrooms, is that going to result in issues with the remaining TAs being able to manage those classrooms?
So what we did was out of the, I believe it was 32 total TAs at the time, we cut seven. We remained seven as being, might be a little bit, my numbers might be off on that, but we remained, retained seven TAs that would be considered floats. Of those seven, they would belong to Welk primarily for any absences, and that we agreed today with the principal that two of those seven would be exclusive to Welk and not leave. So even if there was shortages throughout the district and other areas, two of the seven float TAs would not leave Welk.
All right, and, well, sorry, every time I have to restart the timer for myself, so I have to remember to look down. And now the cuts to the full day preschool program. We're not required to maintain the full day preschool program. Is that accurate?
Correct.
And are we going to have, is the entirety of the full day preschool cut or just some of the classrooms?
Some of the classrooms. We remain, we kept four full day classrooms.
And if there's anyone in excess of those, the enrollment possibilities, what happens to them?
Well, right now, those classrooms that we kept as full day have on average about five students in them right now. So we have the ability to absorb about three in each of those classrooms.
And then if enrollment exceeds three, what happens?
Then we may have to look at opening up another section. Correct.
And that goes to what Mr. Galligan said, about, or Chairman Galligan, about
unexpected expenses, yes. Yeah.
All right, and then for Lippitt, and I'm not sure if this is your purview anymore, so you know better than I. My understanding is that they're closing, the proposal is to close two classrooms for Lippitt Elementary.
Yeah, that would not be me.
Hi, everyone. Lisa Schultz, Executive Director of Elementary Education. At Lippitt Elementary School, we are only closing one classroom, and that is a grade one. They had extremely low numbers, and in order to keep as many teachers as we could to help with the situation, I was able to combine two classes. And right now it looks like there's about 20 students in that one classroom combining two, so it's still way under the state maximum.
And is it fair to say that if the enrollment increases, once you hit a certain point, you're going to open up another one?
Yes, absolutely.
And, well, I guess you've already answered the other question I could have asked, which was, will the teacher be able to handle the increased number? But as you pointed out, yes. And then the next is for AP classes, I guess secondary education. So I got a...
Hi, Tim Kane, Director Secondary for Woke Schools.
So my understanding is at least one, if not... I'm pretty sure actually more than one AP class is being eliminated.
I think it's premature right now. We went through class enrollment tallies to take a look at what science classes were light. For example, if you had a biology in one school that was running 10 sections, we determined in certain cases that may only need 8 sections, and we built flexibility into that. So it's not necessarily advanced placement classes that are going to be affected. It was more the general classes that we were looking at.
All right, yeah, so that was my next
question. They're still working on the master scheduling process, though. I mean, that's a pretty fluid process.
Yeah, that was my next bullet about electives. So if my understanding is for AP classes, if a certain number of students sign up, the class happens, and if they don't, the class doesn't. Is that accurate?
Yes.
And that still will be the case for this upcoming year?
Yes.
And now, I was told that at least one of our pathways requires students take a science AP class. Is that accurate?
Well, what pathway are you referring to? Environmental science?
I believe it was biomedical.
Yes.
Biomedical classes, but yes, AP environmental was the one that was mentioned.
Yes, yeah, so the environmental is a new program that opened at Pilgrim this year, and the goal is to have that as an advanced placement program.
And so is our pathway going to in danger of not being able to function if we shut down any AP classes for science?
No, it'll meet the requirements because we just received approval for that, and we'll ensure that that program runs. I mean, that's one of the stipulations of running that program.
And I was told that we have a star rating when it comes to RIDE based on the number of AP courses we run. Is that accurate?
It is.
So is our star rating in jeopardy of being reduced at all based on the decisions made for this budget?
I think RIDE utilizes the AP ratings, so one facet of the star rating. I think every effort was made, you know, with this budget to run as many programs as possible. But if you were to cut an AP course, it could have a negative effect. That's not the intent right now.
And how did it, so in, let's say with last year's budget, how did it work for AP classes for them to be held? Did it still need to reach a certain number of students?
Correct.
Was it 12 or was it a different number?
I wasn't in the role at that time, so I'll probably defer that question. I don't want to answer incorrectly. I could certainly get you that information.
Yeah, I'm going to assume, but yes, please, thank you. I'm going to assume, given that this wasn't a matter of contention before, that it was a lower threshold prior.
We have run classes, AP classes, in the past with fewer students.
And forgive my ignorance, but is it possible to run a mixed AP honors class?
Yeah, you could run a mixed AP honors class, I would imagine, yes. I don't think that's the intent. You know, I think the intent is to keep a separate AP course.
Just my own two cents based on when I was in school, a mixed AP honors class would have been awesome. Because I was, as a kid, very ignorant of that prospect. So to be able to get in that way would have been fantastic. I likely will have more questions, but for now, I'm going to take a pause, let other people have a chance. We got a lot of lights. Okay. I did not see the order. Councilman Ricks.
Thank you. A brief question on the line item 52-101, health and medical premiums. So on the city side of the budget, health and medical premiums are going up by 9.4%. As I review this budget, school side, fiscal year 27, compared that to the school's health and medical premiums budget for fiscal year 26, I see that this line item has actually gone down by a significant amount. And so wanted to give an opportunity to discuss how those savings were accomplished.
Sure, so for fiscal year 27, so by staying with West Bay Community Health, the self-insured pool, so we have a 3% increase over the current year. I think the increase that we had for this year was, I think, 7.5%. Percent, and that was because in previous years we hadn't taken an appropriate increase in that healthcare. So what you see from fiscal year 26 to fiscal year 27, approximately the $400,000 increase. So that's reflecting the reduction of staff. We have some other grant pieces that are falling into place so we can contain those costs. That's one of the benefits that we have of remaining with the self-insured pool through West Bay.
Thank you. Obviously, that those kinds of numbers, incredibly significant, as potentially difference of hundreds of thousands of dollars, just can make a huge impact in other portions of the budget.
We actually did obtain pricing from another health insurance pool, and that increase was 7.4. So for us, that was a no-brainer to remain where we are.
Absolutely. Thank you for doing your due diligence on that, saving hundreds of thousands. I mean, the way these numbers add up, easy with those percentage increases, potentially difference can easily get into the millions of dollars. And that kind of money makes a real difference when it comes to the ability to preserve a lot of the different programs. So on WELC, just for us to get a handle on the numbers there, what would we be looking at in terms of how much would it cost to keep the programming effectively similar to the way it was this last year going into fiscal year 27? I'm not sure the exact difference in the numbers there.
I don't think I'm the person who can talk about costs. I think that would be correct.
So for a top SEP teacher, master's, family benefits, you're looking at roughly $158,000 for that. Staff person, teacher assistant, depending upon the qualifications they have and the benefits, that could range anywhere from $70,000 to $80,000. So, you know, you're looking at probably, you know, a classroom to open up a new classroom would be roughly, just for the staffing, about $320,000.
And effectively, the WELC program to keep it similar availability, similar numbers this last year going forward, would that be just one classroom or multiple classrooms to think how we're multiplying staffing costs on something like that?
Steve, would you say two more classrooms? Two more. Right. No, two more.
Two more. Just making sure to say it on the mic. So effectively, these cuts to the WELC program, if they were to be restored, we would be looking at over $500,000. I'm not sure if I'm stating that accurately. I want to make sure that I'm posing that as a question here, or would it be greater than that?
So I'm just standing here realizing that the other piece would be the transportation costs. So that would drive that up, depending upon if it was full day, half day, how many kids were riding, if it was a van, if we were doing it on a van, if we were doing it on a smaller bus.
Thank you. Yeah, certainly some different moving pieces there. And I know that a lot of very difficult decisions had to be made in formulating this budget. From what I'm understanding from questions asked by Councilman Foley, Council President Snappy, the cuts that are being made to the WELC program are not going to directly affect special education in terms of making sure that all of the IEP requirements, all of those beyond IEPs, I suppose, all of the requirements that are state mandated and otherwise required for the school system to follow, there's going to be compliance as to the IEPs and state mandates regarding the special needs students, correct?
Absolutely.
Thank you. And let's see. And this is going to continue for students who apply, qualify within the allotments that the school department is making available, continue to have a half-day program, which unfortunately is obviously not the same as a full-day program, but continue that half-day program as to other students who do not necessarily qualify as special needs or have those IEPs, correct?
Yes.
Thank you. I'm hearing the answer yes on that. I'd like to, of course, in my remarks here, just to thank the members of the school committee, school department, the budget commission as well. I know that this has been an extraordinarily difficult last year, extraordinarily difficult planning for this coming year. I do not envy the decisions that have to be made to get us to this point, while making sure that the schools are keeping up with their contractual commitments, keeping up with, well, the financial realities of inflation and simply what things cost. What are the bare essentials to make sure that the doors are staying open, that students are getting the services that they absolutely require? And unfortunately, having to take a hard look at a lot of different programs that are wonderful to have, provide wonderful benefits to the students. But unfortunately, I know that some very difficult decisions do have to be made on what can be afforded here, as the city also has to make some difficult decisions on its side of the budget as well. We've discussed those before. We're going to discuss more of those later this evening. I'm not going to get into those particular items right now because we're not on those particular items. And there are times during these budget hearings where we will be able to, under the Open Meetings Act, discuss those with more particularity. But suffice to say, I certainly do not take any of these cuts lightly that do affect students. And I'm very eager to look for any ways that we can make sure that programs that are benefiting the students, I want to make sure that we as a city and a city council are doing everything possible that we can do to make sure that the funding is there, the support is there, to avoid any cuts that we can possibly avoid. Thank you.
Thank you, Council President. Just a few questions related to the WELC program first. I'm not sure who would be best to address that relative to populations and numbers. So what I understand from what you spoke about earlier is that there's going to be the new proposal here before us is that there's going to be four full day classrooms at this current time?
Correct.
What are we dropping from to get to that four?
Well, our enrollment just isn't there. So when we had five AAP classrooms, which run about six kids, that would be 30, right? And right now we have about 10 or 11 kids who are registered with us right now for an AAP level kind of class. So just right there to start the year, we wouldn't need all five of those sections because if we did, we'd only have two kids in each class. So by consolidating that, that's how we removed three full-day AAPs.
So obviously having two children in a classroom is not sustainable in any business model.
Correct.
Regardless, even in a city that's struggling, certainly not one we can sustain. So it's more of an efficiency cut than...
Yes, in terms of those, absolutely, yes.
Okay. Now, how many students, because we're going down in a number of full-day programs being available, how many students that do not have IEPs or special needs are going to have to transition from full-day to half-day programming?
I don't know the answer to that in terms of students who were 3 years old who already had full-day but were not in an IEP. I don't believe there were any. I believe that we're just not going to be doing full-day for what's called our peer group. It's only half-day options.
Okay. Now, just because I don't know this, mm-hmm. what is the difference between a full-day curriculum and a half-day curriculum? Do the students get the same amount of learning modalities and have the same access, or do students that have a full-day have access to more?
It has more to do with IEP service hours. All right, so it's how many hours of service do they require? Some students have a higher level of need, their service hours reflect 4 hours, maybe 5 hours. No, generally not five, but about four, which would be more than just the half day. And they also get certain services such as speech, OT, and PT on top of it. So they would require a full day to be able to get that full level of service.
So from an educational perspective, the students that don't have IEPs are not seeing any reduction in any educational
Correct.
Related services. Okay.
I will add this, is that the difficulty with going to half days is that it's a challenge for people to, if you have a four-year-old, getting them there from, 11 o'clock to 2 o'clock every day is a challenge.
Parenting generally is a challenge,
right.
I appreciate
that. The difficulty becomes is that we are required to have a certain number of peer models inside of a classroom by state regulation. So that's one of the challenges we are facing with this change.
If you have a student that is a full day because of an IEP need, and there's a sibling that does not have an IEP, mm-hmm. is there any sort of planning consideration given to a family that has that sort of makeup to allow the sibling to stay with brother or sister for the remainder of the school?
There presently is a situation like that, and we are not at this time offering full day to the other sibling.
Okay. And now, if you could just explain a little bit what my understanding from conversations that I've had with members of the school committee and the administration is that there were some scheduling changes relative to when teachers do planning or how the actual schedule is made up.
Correct.
Can you just explain for us here on the council floor and for the public what those changes look like?
So at this point in time, what happens is that within the course of the day, the individual teachers do not have time in their day to receive their prep and non-teaching time plus their contractual lunch time. So as a result, there is a part of the contract that speaks to them receiving every other Friday where the students do not come in, and that's when they get their contractual number of hours for lunch and prep. What we're looking to do is to be able to build a break in the middle of the day that is long enough to meet the contractual obligations for non-teach / prep and their lunch, so that way every other Friday doesn't have to happen. But that's something that's in the contract that needs to be discussed.
So in the current model, the teachers don't get a lunch break?
In the current model, I believe they get lunch break, but they don't get their contractual non-teach.
Non-teaching time for planning and such?
Correct.
Okay.
Am I right? All right.
And that? Then questions about Lipid School were addressed to my satisfaction, at least. That was a concern of mine. There were several constituents that did reach out. Lipid is in my ward, so I'm glad to see that, again, we're just looking at efficiency cuts and changes with the intention of expanding if there are more pupils that do enroll the coming years. Now, Mr. Kane, I don't know if you could just speak one more time about the AP classes so I'm clear. You said that there wasn't an elimination of the offering, but you were eliminating sections, 10 sections. Can you just explain that, dig into that a little bit for me?
Yeah, it was not with regards to AP. So when we take a look at the course tallies, we are able to predict how many students will, per se, have a chemistry class, a biology class. And then you realize you need a certain amount of flexibility built into that. So You, if you have 10 sections allocated and you realize you only need 8, you may run 9 in the schedule just to make sure there's some flexibility. Really didn't take a look at cutting AP or anything along that line. It was all related to the core subject areas. That being said, in a perfect budget, you would run every AP course you could even think of to increase your star rating. But there's a budgetary reality to that as well.
It was brought to my attention via email from, I believe it was a member of the Warwick Teachers Union, that an interest in these programs is down. Have you or has anyone in the administration looked at possible reasons why student interest seems to be lower? Is there anything that we can do to get interest back up? Or is that just any thoughts on that?
Actually, there's more availability now more than ever for a student to take an advanced placement course. Technically, you're not going to deny a student. So even if you believe that it would be a tall order for a student to take an advanced placement course, it would give them that ability. Additionally, with the pathways that we're offering right now, I mean, the environmental science pathways was the highest scoring application in the state, which is why they approved that pathway. With regards to CTC, I know there's been a lot of talk about students going out of district, specifically the areas like North Kingstown. It's not due to a lack of programs. The current Career and Tech Center right now has over 500 students, 100 of which we take tuition from West Warwick. They compete well nationally in all of those programs. They offer certifications with agencies like Electric Boat that can't be replicated in other spots. But quite frankly, people go to other areas because of things like fields, of things like perhaps the lacrosse team they may play for, which is on the border of another city. And they utilize pathways and CTC as the mechanism to get there. So right now, currently, that building is near max enrollment, with the exception of a couple programs. So I think the programs here are strong.
Thank you. And then just one question on electives. There was a suggestion that possibly some electives, such as forensics and some of the other kind of specialty programs that may be getting eliminated due to either reductions in staffing or not enough enrollment or competing against one another, for instance. Is there any truth to that?
Yeah, so I think historically before this year, there's always competition between departments to create and run electives that students are going to want to sign up for, which makes sense, and it leads to strength of programs. With regards to cutting those electives, there was no look when we went through determining how many social studies teachers we need with regards to electives. It was all based upon the cores, but it's not out of the question that an elective could be cut as you cut a faculty member.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Kane. That's all the questions I have.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to start off by asking Mr. Enos some questions. And this will probably bounce back and forth between yourself and the superintendent. In the superintendent's position paper, which he read most of it into the record, it says the primary drivers of this increase are contractual salary obligations, employee benefits, pension contributions, non-staffing requirements, transportation costs, and out-of-district tuition. And again, on page 2, it speaks to that again. And it says the reality is that approximately 94% of the budget, including salaries, benefits, transportation, out-of-school districts, et cetera. What is the percentage of the salaries, healthcare costs, and pensions?
Mr.
So we're probably at close to, let's see, 111, 112, 150, 172. So you're probably the little bit over 80 to 82% of the budget.
So 80 plus percent.
Yep. Which is normal.
So as we know, the city council has nothing to do with negotiating the contracts. So while these concerns are made quite apparent, it's the school department and the school committee that negotiates these contracts. So during those negotiations, there's an opportunity to make changes. Now, those changes are difficult, but that's what we're elected to do. We're elected to make difficult decisions. What is the enrollment of all the schools today, public schools today?
That number, I don't. What's the enrollment of all the schools? Current?
Correct.
Current.
The enrollment in the Warwick school system.
Total number of students, approximately 7,879 students. We're financially responsible for approximately 8,566 students. And this was as of the date that we pulled the data.
So actual students attending the Warwick school system is 7,879.
Yes, okay. And depending upon when you pull the data, if you pull it next week, it may be a little bit less. 2 weeks from now might be a little bit more because, mm-hmm. as you know, public schools, we have transient populations.
But history shows us that there has been a relatively steady decline in student population.
In 2023, 2024, we had 8,012 students. So we're looking at... What's that? That's 133 students difference between 23-24 and this year. So over 2 years, it dropped 133 students.
Sure. By the same token, in the mid-70s, I believe we had somewhere around 22,000 students.
We may have, but we also had staffing to accommodate it at that point as well. At one point, I believe we had over 1,400 teachers in the district.
Superintendent, Mr. Enos said that there were going to be approximately 38 retirees this year. Is it the intention of the school department to replace those retirees, or is the intent to compress costs through attrition?
At this point, our projection is to have 15 administrative central office administrators, have 367 classified members, have 5 school committee members, have 28 building administrators, 24 middle management members, professional staff. We're projecting to have 836.9 professional staff members for a total of 1,277.9 FTEs for Warwick Schools to operate for next year, as long as the enrollment stays constant as it where it is right now.
I'm not sure if he answered my question. He said there'd be about 38 retirees this year.
Yes.
Is the school department going to be replacing those retirees or allowing attrition to just take its course?
It'll be based upon our staffing needs for the district. So if they're retiring and they're in a classroom with 25 students, we have to replace that position, yes.
So it's fair to say that
if there's someone retiring from a non-classroom position, we will reevaluate the position to see if it's needed, if it can be redesigned at that point. But we are looking at everything. We're stretching every single dollar to make this budget work.
With that said, this current budget that is before us, is that based upon the 38 retirees actually retiring and not being replaced? Or is there an assumption in there that a certain percentage of them will be replaced?
That would be considered to be breakage.
I'm sorry?
The difference would be considered to be breakage, and our intent is that breakage is going to help us balance this budget.
Your workers' comp premium, are you self-insured with workers' comp as well?
We are. Would you like to, for sure. Classified, right?
Yep.
Would you like to explain that?
Sure.
And also the chattel language.
So the workers' compensation is only for the members of the WISE bargaining unit and the administration. So the teachers are not part of it. So for the teachers, we are self-insured through that, and we pay a Blue Cross premium as part of our monthly payment. And we have Beacon is who we have who provides our workers' comp.
And I see where...
Hang on.
I see there's a note here that you have an anticipated 10% increase in workers' comp this year.
Yes, we don't have the rate for that yet. As you are probably aware, you know, when you're looking at your workers' comp rate, it's the previous 3 years. So if you have a bad year, that bad year stays within your modification. And
right.
So we don't have what that rate is yet. So.
What is your experience modification?
I don't know that number off the top of my head. I can get that information to you.
Are you below one or are you above one?
We are above one.
You're above
one. From what my memory serves.
No, if you didn't talk so much.
On the final end of your tabulation, I'm not clear on one of the calculations. You're showing for 2027 a gross of $205,351,332. Then you're showing program /other reductions/assumptions of $1,476,815. But I don't see where that number was deducted out of the 205 million. So could you explain that, please?
So for the projected total expenses, $205,351,332. Then the two areas that we're looking for additional savings, breakage, $995,010.
Yeah.
Subtract that out and then take the additional transportation savings that we're hoping to get, $481,805. Those two numbers equal $1,476,815.
Okay.
Subtracting that from the 205 brings us down to the 203.